Hello and welcome back to My Xbox and Me Extra, episode 10. Such a big episode, such a big milestone to get to for this brand new show that we killed MC Fixer. He is not here today, but I am Matt P. Video hosting the show, and I'm joined by the one and only Too Fresh Crash. Crash, how you doing?
Hello, I'm doing good. I didn't realize we killed Fix. I guess since we kill you every other week, it's only fair.
It's only fair that we return the favor. And of course, Paul Despawn is here as well, who drove the knife in and twisted it, I saw, which I thought was actually quite mean.
I have an alibi. How dare you? I was not there. You can't prove a thing.
None of us were there, in fact, because we were all playing Dragon's Dogma 2, which is what we're here to talk about today. But before we get into that, remember to subscribe to the YouTube channel and go check out the Baldur's Gate 3 My D&D Let's Play series that we've been doing, where we've been role-playing the characters that we're playing in Baldur's Gate. It's a lot of fun. The last episode, The Halcyon Heist Part 2. Did we save Halcyon? You'll have to go check it out to find out. Or maybe just watch next week's episode where we hopefully will save Halcyon.
So you just ruined it now.
Spoilers.
Matt, you know you're supposed to say spoiler at the beginning, not at the end. We had this conversation.
I don't think he knows that.
Does he not?
I think what we've learned is Matt does not know when you give spoiler warnings.
Okay.
One time. Well, I can't even remember what it was I spoiled, but nobody cared.
Suicide Squad.
It was Suicide Squad.
Nobody cared.
Two people cared.
Halcyon Heist.
I mean,
which more people probably care about that than Suicide Squad, if we're going to be real.
Yeah. Okay. I believe that yeah, for sure. And if you want to catch the next episode, you can do so on YouTube at My Xbox and Me, or indeed on twitch.tv/MyXboxMe, I guess. I'm not a Twitch guy. I don't know how that works.
Nailed it.
That was correct. Yeah.
Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the notification bell, you'll be notified when we go live. And of course, your feedback is always welcome. We've done 3 episodes of My D&D now. We've done 10 episodes of My Xbox and Me Extra. Let us know what you think of it in the Discord, in the My Xbox and Me Discord, or comment on the YouTube videos, and we will take that feedback on board. We always do. We've talked about it before, about dropping segments of the show, and then people have gone, no, please don't drop that segment. It's like, well, you never told us in the first place that you liked the segment. Then we talked about dropping it, and now you're up in arms about it. Then we'll keep the segment in.
Matt.
But you never told us in the first place. So tell us in the first place. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't. We'll change the show for you. But without further ado, I think we get into topic. We don't really do topic of the show on Extra, do we?
No, we just kind of talk about what we've been playing, I guess.
Well, here it is. Topic of the show. Should you, dear listener, buy Dragon's Dogma 2? I am now about 15 hours in. Talked about it on this week's My Xbox and Me, which, behind the curtain, we recorded yesterday. Mm-hmm. I put about 5 hours in yesterday.
Okay.
And my opinion has somewhat changed.
Oh, okay.
But I did say on the show that I thought it might. But I'm interested to hear from Crash, because we had a discussion on this week's episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
And Crash jumped in halfway in. So
I had no context. No context.
He did not know where we were at in that conversation. So if you've listened to this week's episode, you haven't probably heard Crash's initial thoughts of the game. So Crash, let's start with you. Dragon's Dogma 2, how far in are you? How are you feeling on the game?
I'm like 12 or 13-ish hours. I think I was at 10 before then. I got like another 2 or 3 hours in yesterday. Mm-hmm. I am absolutely loving this game. I think there are obvious like issues with it, like be it technical issues or some gameplay decisions that feel odd. But once you start playing the game more and those sort of just become habit or you just get used to them, I think that there aren't very many games that give you an experience like this that are available out there. And I think that's really the takeaway from the game. It is those moment-to-moment experiences. And when you have one of those experiences, it is a standout experience. It's not something you'd get in many other games. I think the closest comparison would probably be to like a Red Dead Redemption, I think, where you're like randomly walking around and you'll see an NPC doing something. It feels like that world's lived in. And I feel like Dragon's Dogma does that a lot as well, very successfully in its own way.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Like it does feel lived in. I think I was talking about like it feels chaotic, right? Like you can be roaming around in the wilderness and see a griffin fighting a cyclops, fighting one guy who's just an archer, and it's like, oh, this is not gonna end well for this guy. Do I help? Nah, I'm gonna run on by and see how that goes. yeah, it, like, it feels chaotic and like you say, lived in, I think is like a really good way of putting it. Even if a lot of the characters, the dialogue and the story feels quite archaic as far as video games go, right? It, like, to me, it feels like a sort of 360 story in the sense of, like, it's fantasy, dragons, things. There's no, like, I haven't come across any, like, real nuance or like decision making where I've like felt the weight of the decision yet. Like, I'm, like I say, I'm 15 hours in, maybe that comes later. I know, like, there are choices to be made, right, and story decisions to make. But yeah, so Despawn, where are you at with the game? How far in are you? And what are your initial thoughts?
So I'm about, I want to say like two and a half hours. I played it yesterday on stream. Definitely go check it out on twitch.tv/ my Xbox and me and youtube.com/my Xbox and me. But yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm on the like very early in, and it is, the jank is there. The jank is real. It is janky. And I think it's a bit off putting the lack of actual storytelling in this game. Like, it, the opening feels like a really like cold opening. I feel like I've missed like a cutscene somewhere.
Yeah.
You are basically, again, no spoilers, it is how the game opens. You are in a prison and no one explains how you are in the prison. You are just in the prison. I know it gets explained later on as you go along, but it's like, it's just such a bad way to explain it for me, I think.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And, but as I'm playing, I'm just, again, just for clarity, I'm playing on PC at the moment. There are definite issues with this game on PC. Like, the frame rate is bad. Like, quote unquote bad. Like, I'm thinking I'm getting like 20, 30 at some points. And yeah, it is, it's not great. But taking away those kind of like technical issues, which they can patch out, the moment to moment gameplay is good, bordering on great. So far I've, the best bit I've had is, and I think we've all seen it, it's in the trailer, is when a large troll pops out of the ground, in front of like a dam. And you and your squad basically have to take it down. And it's those moments where, again, I did what's in the trailer. I threw the fire barrel at the blocks up dam, which went out a deluge of water and knocked it over, and then I climbed up it and started stabbing it in the back of the neck. And it's those moments which are like just quote unquote cool. They are, it is cool to be able to do that, to be able to climb up an enemy and like take it out. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting further into the game and actually looking some more abilities, and like seeing how those all work together and kind of building my team out. So right now I've purposely built out my team as a balanced team. So I've got one of every vocation between me and my pawns.
Yeah.
So I am playing as a rogue or a fighter. Rogue, thief, I guess, whatever. And then my main pawn is a mage. And then I've hired a fighter and whatever the last one was.
Archer. Ranger.
Archer. Yeah, ranger. Yeah. So I'm covered across all the boards for now.
Yeah. Because there are also more vocations than those that you can unlock throughout the game.
Yeah, I know you can say.
When you said it, you thought it was good bordering on great. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the great comes in. When you start unlocking those other vocations, or you just start leveling up through your one and you start getting new abilities, and then like that's when it becomes really good. Like you talk about like climbing up a troll and stabbing in the back of the neck. I now have an ability where I can basically like blink teleport while stabbing. Mm-hmm. So I will like blink teleport up to a troll's eye, stab him in the eye, and then like hang there with a spear. Like it's fucking sick. Like pulling off that stuff is like so fucking fun. Or like fighting giant flying creatures and like holding on and going like, I don't know if I've got enough stamina to get through whatever they're doing right now as they sort of fly and are going to do some sort of ground pound. Those are the moments where you go, wow, this game is doing stuff that, all right, you've kind of seen in Shadow of the Colossus or Monster Hunter even, right? But like, there is something about that chaos of this world that makes it just so much more fun. Like that initial troll fight that you're talking about that's in the trailers. I think there are like, there's your party of pawns. There's also like four or five other NPCs involved in that fight. And the scale of those fights feels so much fun, right? Like some of the monster fights that are scripted in the game are brilliant in that sense. And some of the unscripted ones that just happen to be brilliant.
I was going to say there's a lot of unscripted moments because I had a moment where I walked out of a cave. It's the middle of the night. I'm like, I need to find the campsite. I need to get back to town or whatever. And a minotaur just pops up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it feels like this narratively epic moment for like me and my crew of people. There is no script. There is no actual story going on. I was just exploring a random cave. There was nothing. Yeah. There was no actual story being told, but there was this sort of adventure experience that I walked away with that I think was really impressive. And if the game can keep doing that through the rest of that, my time in it, I would be more than happy with that. I think that alone is enough, even through those technical difficulties. I think that alone is enough for me to keep playing the game.
Yeah, I like it too. And like the you know, often what will happen in those situations as well is another crew of four will show up of like well-balanced party. That's something I like wish was in this game is like that will often happen. You'll run across crews of four people that look like a well-balanced party. There'll be like a fighter, a mage and a ranger and a whatever. Mm-hmm. And you will get into fights and they will help and stuff. Even like there are some like bandit camps that will attack you. There's like crew of four well-balanced teams that will attack you. But if somebody helps you like that, then there's no option to interact with that crew after, right? You can talk to them and they'll give you some generic line of get out
well
of my
met.
Face, dude, or whatever. Yeah, exactly. I wish there was like some sort of then like, oh, like we need to haggle over the parts of this monster or something. Like I want to feel like you're adventuring in this world as well. Which would kind of counter the you are the arisen, you are the chosen one. I'm kind of like, why are these other dudes out and around? Like, what's going on? Like, nobody seems to reference the fact that there are other adventurers out there, but then you'll bump into them and they'll be around. I guess there's like the vocation guild, so it's assumed that there are other adventurers around, but I don't know, it feels weird. And because pawns are these like interdimensional, multidimensional beings. They feel very separate to that as well. It's not like I can hire these other adventurers that are coming around because I'd rather have them than a pawn for some reason. That's one of those things that like, you're right, the world does feel very lived in, but there are those gaps where I'm like, oh, it would be nice to like bring this in, right? And make this feel like a part of the world.
The gaps really like, become apparent whenever you're talking to an NPC. I think NPCs are probably like the most lack, aside from pawns and the way they interact, and they'll go on adventures, they'll come back and they'll be like, oh, I found a chest over here while they're exploring with you, even if it's not your own pawn. Like,
yes,
I was on an adventure with another person and I found a chest or I found an item or whatever the case is. And I think that's really cool. They'll become quest guides for you and stuff like that. But when you're talking about anything other than the pawns in your group, I think that's where it sort of starts to falter for me and it becomes a little bit uninteresting. In talking to people, even like some of the story NPCs that I've run into so far, they just feel lackluster, be it voice acting, be it their purpose, be it whatever the case is. They just don't feel like where I talked about the world being lived in. It feels like they're very much so NPCs with a very short script and don't have a lot to do.
Yeah,
I kind of, and like I felt the opposite in a very specific circumstance. There's a quest line you do for an elf archer quite early on. It's a side quest, so you could miss it or skip it. And I felt like that was really good. Like that was fleshed out. Like this is a guy who has a family and a society and he has like a ranking in that society and that's important. And if again, feels lived in, right? Like he takes you to that place. So you speak the language, like all these things that like make it feel immersive. But then in the same breath on your way there, you're going to get into a fight with a troll with a bunch of people that you can't talk to. Like these things of like, yeah, exactly. It feels lived in and at the same time kind of feels retro as far as video games go and the way it's made up. And then like you say, if they're not tied to a quest, they're the most generic. The shopkeepers, like there's nobody's got any personality or difference in them, you know, like it just feels a bit old school in that sense, I think. I wish it felt more, like you say, natural.
Yeah, I think everything feels like the way I'm at the moment, especially like early on, it definitely feels very much like everything's there to serve a purpose rather than to tell a story. It's very much like the shopkeeper is there to be a shopkeeper. Don't expect anything else from them. Your quest givers are there to give the line that they need to give and then move on with the day. Nothing is there to kind of expand the world. It's there to expand the A to B, as it were. And it's like, it's, I think that's what's stopping it being great for me right now at the moment, is it's very much, it feels like you said before, it feels like a 360 era game that is just, it looks prettier. That's it. But that doesn't make it like bad. It just
the technical
doesn't.
Technical achievement is obviously there, right? Of the scales of the battles and the, you know, these things you just couldn't do on 360.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then obviously I think we probably need to touch on the controversy, which I know we talked about in the main My Xbox and Me episode, but Crash, like, how are you feeling on that? Have you, you know, after however many hours you put in, 12, 13, have you come across the microtransactions and been tempted by them? And do you think that's a good or bad thing?
I don't, like, as a more general term, I think it's a bad thing. I don't think microtransactions like these necessarily need to be in games, especially this game. I do know there were some conversations where people were assuming that the game was designed around having these microtransactions, but from my understanding, this is very much so how the first Dragon's Dogma was as well, with teleporting and the traveling and management and all that stuff being relevant to how you play the game. So with that in mind, I don't think it really bothers me, because it doesn't feel like they went out of their way to add the microtransactions. They're just kind of there. Yeah. On top of that, I don't think the microtransactions, even if you buy them, drastically change your experience that much, other than being able to hire higher level pawns, which I think does yourself a disservice, because I do think the experience and the difficulty that you'll have earlier on in the game is very well worth playing the game that way, as opposed to I'm going to go in higher level 30 pawn because I can. I do think that would be a disservice to the player. So I'm not really too bothered by it. I also think it's a very Capcom thing, which we did say yesterday. Overall, I don't think the microtransactions are worth doing at all if you're playing this game. I think you will do yourself a disservice with any of the microtransactions.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree. Like you say, the point, especially in the early game, is that you are underpowered, underleveled. Like, you need to be conscious about going out at night. Like, basically, don't go out at night. And, like, you need to be thinking about these things and thinking about how long it's going to take you to get back to camp and all these things. And having, you know, infinite fairy stones that you can fast travel to waypoints would certainly do away with that aspect of the game. And it is something that I found frustrating, like not like worrying about how many fairy stones I've got. I think I've used one, and so yeah, I'm hoarding them a little bit. I think I've probably got 6 or 7. So it's not like, you know, 15 hours of play, 6 or 7, getting one every couple of hours maybe. It's not like they're that scarce maybe, but it's the classic thing of getting the rocket launcher and saving all the rocket launcher ammo for the big boss that never comes, right? Yeah. Classic video game resource management. I'm going to end the game with 100 of them. I know I am, you know? So, I agree. I don't think that they're that egregious. I think the fact that, you know, is this Capcom's first $70 game? I think it is.
I'm going to be honest. It's not a $70 game.
Is it not?
No, this game was like, it was 50. Well, I don't know about exchange rate, but it was like £50 on Steam.
Just straight up?
£53 pretty, something.
But you got it on, you got it with the Humble Bundle sale.
Nope.
Is that with that included?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope, I just got it straight direct through Steam. It's to be fair, I bought the premium edition just to see the difference. And yeah, that was like 62. So it's cheaper. But I don't
well,
know
that's
if
mad. I'm sure it's been marketed and sort of sold as a $70 game.
It's a $70 game.
Okay.
Okay, fine.
UK exchange rate. Yeah,
I guess so, maybe. But anyway, like, yeah, I think I agree with Crash in the sense that, like, whilst I don't really feel, I think it's been blown out of proportion for Dragon's Dogma, right? Like, you know, microtransactions for changing your character's appearance and stuff like that, those resources in the game are not expensive. You can get them, it'll be fine, you'll be fine. You can't change your character's name, I've noticed. You can change their appearance, but you can't change their name, which is, you know, by the by, they're not selling that, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, like, I agree. I think if it's a $70 single player game, you don't need to do this and just piss off the fan base. Having said that, we know 90% of people who play Dragon's Dogma probably don't even know there's a controversy around microtransactions. They probably don't give a shit. They won't interact with them. They won't care. They won't bother. So yeah, I agree. I think it's been blown out of proportion, but it is that slippery slope of, well, if Dragon's Dogma 2 sells really well, and if the microtransactions make Capcom money, they're just gonna, you're just gonna keep edging towards that point where it does become an issue, where it does become a problem in Dragon's Dogma 3 or whatever the next thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it sets a bit of a dangerous precedent. What, how do you feel about it, Paul? Only a couple of hours in, have you even seen him? Like, I had to, yesterday, I had to go into the menus and find them because I was like, oh, I want to see what it's like.
So I've seen them in the Steam store, and I've seen what's available. I actually, because I looked at, because I was obviously thinking about which version to buy, like the normal version or the premium edition. And I worked out how much you get for getting the premium edition. And it's like, yeah, it works out. You get a nice deal on it.
Sure.
But so I got the premium version, and the only thing I've used out of that premium version so far is I think I got like a level 9 pawn, just because, you know, why not? I'll try it out. Sure. But it didn't have any major effect on my playtime because I was like level 5-6 at the time anyway. So yeah, just a couple of extra levels. And by that point, I'm already level 9 again now as well. So I've caught up to them. And it does a quick, I think it does a pretty cool thing in the fact that, like, we'll talk about the gameplay and the experience. I'll get to the DLC and stuff in a second. But, like, I like how your hired pawns don't level up. So you have to keep looking at changing them anyway.
Yes.
So, like, you're going to do yourself a detriment.
Like.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, initially okay. I didn't like that idea. I wanted my party and I wanted to run with my party.
That's fair.
But then, yeah, there is something quite nice about swapping them out and getting better ones and just having them be expendable. That sounds so weird and bad.
Yeah.
But like, you've got your main pawn, that's where your like connection is, and I like mm-hmm. that. And I'm willing to give them some equipment and stuff like that. But yeah, I like,
oh, they're my pack mule.
Constantly
yeah.
swapping them out.
I also like, you can summon your friend's pawn, and I summon my friend's pawn, and then I switched out their weapon and gave them a better weapon because I'm like, I don't care. They end up keeping the weapon when the pawn goes back to the person. I'm like, mm-hmm. they can have the weapon upgrade. That's cool. I'm not using that class or whatever.
Yeah.
A little gift for the person, but also there is that attachment if you go that route as well to summon your friend's pawns as opposed to random pawns if it fits mm-hmm. within your party, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, which I think is very cool.
But going back to the DLC and the microtransaction stuff, again, very early in the game, I have not found a point where I feel like I need to use any of it. The only thing, like I said, the only thing I used is the credits to buy a new pawn. But yeah, like, again, so this conversation, I think, is an interesting one in like the grander scheme of things, because we all know, like, we've all discussed it many a time, making video games is bloody expensive. It's not a cheap endeavor. There is more and more risk to releasing a game because the profit margins keep getting smaller and smaller and the market doesn't grow as much as we want it to, blah, 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 blah. Things like this, where it's like an optional extra that are not going to affect the gameplay that much to anyone else in a single player game. Like, if you want to quick skip, fine, do it, whatever. It's your money, do what you want. There seems to be this conversation around the fact that the developers are going to design the game to only work with DLC and microtransactions. Do we honestly think that the general day-to-day developer is the kind of person that would do that? Like, yeah, the CEO might want that, the shareholders might want that, but do we think that the developers en masse are going to be like, we want to make a game that is only playable with microtransactions? They want to make a game that is the best game possible.
Yeah, to be fair, though, when people say developer, they're not talking about the person who's in there working on every day. They're talking about Capcom as a whole. They're not.
Yeah.
They're talking about the
company. They're talking shareholders and CEOs. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, which is like, it's fair. They may want to push that. And
yeah,
certainly we've seen in history where like, oh, we really need multiplayer games because multiplayer games sell. And then we force a multiplayer game because the shareholders want it. And then you get the game and the game ends up being bad. I'm sure at some point a game will be released around its microtransactions and people will complain because the mechanics are going to suck because everything is going to need money, unless you're talking about like some sort of gacha game or something where people are okay with it for whatever reason.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I think those games already exist and, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're terrible. 1 time out of 10, it's Genshin and, you know, Crash loves it. But I genuinely don't think like that we're gonna get anywhere near anytime soon we're gonna get developers actively developing their games to be reliant on these things. And I think they are an optional extra that are gonna, you know, help games survive and thrive in these kind of markets where like the margin for error is getting smaller and smaller. And if, you know, if somebody, if like I say, if I wanted to go like, you know what, I don't want to grind out this character. I just want to buy a big ass pawn who's going to carry me through for the next few hours because the combat's getting a little bit annoying and I just want to have fun with it. Fine, I've got that option to do it. And again, we've seen it. Capcom, this is not new to them. Resident Evil, they've done it on those before. And yeah, I don't think this is going to stop. And it, like I said, I've got no problems as long as it is things that do not affect the, like, if it doesn't affect a multiplayer game and it doesn't affect the core experience, then put as many microtransactions in there as you want to keep your game afloat.
I don't know, man. Like for me, it's everybody chases the next big money making thing, right? Yeah. Like when Fortnite comes out and does incredibly well, everybody's like, "Fuck, how do we do that? How do we build the Fortnite?" And not everybody, obviously. But you know, a lot of the industry will chase the next big money making thing. And so if Capcom come out next week, which I don't think they will, and I don't think this will happen, but go, "Oh fuck, we've made $3 million on selling fairy stones to people," then I could see an Assassin's Creed start selling microtransactions.
They already do. Yeah, they already
sell XP. Not fast travel, but XP. No, okay. But you also don't. I get what you're saying, but like those things are already being sold, and they've been sold for a long time. They've been sold probably since, I don't want to say the PS3 generation, but definitely the PS4 and Xbox One generation.
Here's my question.
Sort of.
But like, do you like, so maybe this is really cynical, right? But I've been playing for 15 hours, Dragon's Dogma 2. I have 2 fast travel points. I have one in my inventory that I can put down somewhere. They are far apart. And like when I'm going out on quests and stuff, I'm traveling for in-game days to get to those quests. Is that designed that way to be like, hey, this is a more enticing thing now because
you can't buy an unlimited amount. Like, I'd agree with you if they let you just keep buying them, but like you get like the one purchase in the store, you get however many you get for buying it in the store, and that's it. They don't like let you keep buying them, so I don't think the design is around that. I'm pretty sure everything in the store is just pre-order bonuses, and limited edition bonuses for the most part.
In the store, there is, so with the pre-order bonus and the premium edition bonus, you get one of like everything. And I think in the market, like in the DLC store, you can buy like an extra 4 of the credit packs and things like that. But yeah, it's not like unlimited. You can't just keep buying them. I'm going to say my big question for you guys, and I guess it's a bit of a loaded one, but what would you prefer? Optional DLC in all of your games, or an increase in the core price across the board?
Optional DLC. If the optional DLC isn't like a core game feature, because like honestly, we were talking about like a Dragon, we should have had this conversation even more so, because that game sold its whole entire new game plus as DLC.
Yeah.
So like if we're really talking about it, like that conversation should have been happened. And I think that's more of a core feature than anything you get in Dragon's Dogma 2 as DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the truth is in the next 5 years, we see both. I think we see an increase in this kind of stuff, selling like you say, it's been happening for a long time now. But I think we just see more and more and more of it. And I think we do see a core price increase. And it's probably about 5 years out, I reckon.
Yeah, or, I mean, to be fair, we
GTA
already
does it.
GTA does it. I mean,
GTA is going to do a price increase, but I don't think will be following GTA. GTA could charge. GTA is such a cheat code because GTA could charge $100. I don't think it would affect sales that much.
I agree,
but I will.
I do think people would follow it, rightly or wrongly. Mm. It may backfire on them, but I think people would follow it.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I do think it would backfire. I don't know if there's many companies that can sell a game at $100 and get people to buy them. Maybe like one of the sports games, just because those fans are like fanatic and they like those games for whatever reason, and they're already going to drop $300-$400 on the game.
It's mad though, isn't it? If you get to a point where the console is $350 or $450 and then you're charging $100 for a game, like
I mean, that's kind of where we're at the moment. Like, you got to remember, when this generation launched, the first thing that PlayStation tried to do was, well, did, because it is the standard for them now, is bump the price from $60 to $70 for all their games.
Yeah.
So, you know, the price increase is coming, and well, it, technically it's here. I think it's going to get worse. Not worse, but I think it's going to, because I genuinely think that we are getting a good deal on all our gaming. Yeah. The amount of gameplay we get nowadays, like the AAA market specifically anyway, the amount of gameplay we get for our $70, $60, like look at it like a dragon. I put 90 plus hours into that. Yeah, Final Fantasy, 100 hours. You know, I'm getting a lot of entertainment for my money, and the amount of effort that goes into making that is getting more and more expensive. So we're going to start seeing those prices go up.
I think we're going to see like twofold. I think we're going to definitely see the prices go up, but I also think we're going to see games scale down quite a bit as well. And we're going to go back to like more of these linear, like completely like structured experiences where it's like, hey, this is a 10-hour experience. It's going to be really, really in depth, the same as we would have put for like our past like game that cost $300 million or whatever to make, except this one's going to be $100 million and it's going to be a lot more in budget. I do think we'll see the return of those to a degree, because we haven't really, we'll see a linear game every once in a while as far as AAA goes, but for the most part, a lot of them are like open world or moving to them. Even when you look at like Last of Us 2 compared to Last of Us 1, they added like these whole big open world sections to those as well. Well, not open world.
Yeah, God of War as well, right? Like, it's, we're in an interesting space because there's also more options than ever for the pricing of games, right? Like, we see regular Helldivers, $40 games. We have Game Pass where we're paying for it monthly and it's going there, but also going out for $70. And so, like, we're in this really, like, turbulent time, I think, or, like, transitional time where there's a lot of different pricing going on for video games. Which brings us quite nicely into, should you buy Dragon's Dogma 2 at, let's assume it's $70 for everybody, and there are no sales on right now. Crash, do you think people should buy this game? And I guess, like, sort of what gamer should buy this game? If you like X and Y, you're probably going to love Dragon's Dogma 2.
I'm going to say yes. I think, yes, this game, if you like fantasy games, I think this is worth it. I think if you like a mix, I want to say Souls, but I don't think, because like the difficulty, I want to say Souls, but this game is nothing like Souls. So no. I don't think that fits. I don't know what other experience I would put this. I think if you like fantasy games, I think this is definitely something you should look into. If you like RPGs, I think it's definitely if you should look into. I don't know if there's an exact game that I would say, like, if you like said game, this game fits that for you, because I think this does a lot of unique stuff that is very fun but particular to this game.
Yeah. Despawn?
I don't know. This one's a hard one for me, because right now I'm leaning towards no, but only, it depends where you're playing it, I think. If you are a PC gamer, no, wait.
Hold off.
Wait for patches.
I will say, I'm playing on PC and I haven't had frame drops or anything, unless I'm in a big city. I've been absolutely fine. Yeah.
Fair? Okay. But my personal experience right now is very much like I am pushing through because I'm enjoying this step-by-step experience. But if you, let's put it this way, if you are the kind of gamer that cares about frame rate and graphical fidelity and all that kind of stuff, hold off, wait. But if you are, like I say, if you are a fantasy fan, look who's joined us.
Oh, is this becoming a regular thing on the My Xbox Me podcast? A mid podcast joining.
I just wanted to ruin the setup for these bold, dear Mr. SMO episode bitches.
Unbelievable.
This freaking guy.
Out, right?
Yeah, I could definitely cut that part out. Yeah.
So hold on. Here we go. Despawn, you're back in on Should You Buy Dragon's Dogma? Ready? 3, 2, 1.
I hope Fix never escapes that boot. it's weird. Yeah, no is my answer. But it's with a big asterisk. If you can look past all the graphical and like technical issues, honestly, some of the dated gameplay design, there is a ton of fun experience to be had here. And if you don't care about all that like issues, then go for it. But right now, I would say wait for a deal, because I feel like we're going to get one sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's almost where I am as well. Like, I think it's easy to get caught up in the zeitgeist of, like, people playing this game and, like, loving it, and you're seeing all the TikToks and da-da-da-da-da. You got to remember, this is a single-player game. If you're still busy with, you know, Baldur's Gate or Rebirth or, like, Infinite Wealth, and you're going to hold off to the summer, I think you're likely to see a sort of Steam summer sale, maybe get 10% off or 20% off this game. As we sort of get towards the end of the year, I think then it's a no-brainer. Right now, like, I'm having some significant frame rate issues on Xbox Series X in big cities, like you said, Crash. Not, interestingly, in combat. Like, that, it really is technically good in the open world and in combat. It is the kind of mundane cities that cause issues for the game, which is interesting.
I think they came out with a statement that said it was the NPCs and how sort of like free they are to do sort of whatever they want. Mm-hmm. This sort of causes, it's a little, very big on CPU, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. We chatted a little bit about it before you jumped on podcast yesterday. And yeah, that's exactly what it seems like. So,
just go on your murder spree.
The time, say again, sorry.
People are planning murder sprees.
Yeah. Just go on a murder spree. You'll be fine.
Murder everybody in the town. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I was saying, I think, like, if you can wait 3-4 months and get this game on sale when they've patched out all those technical issues, then I think it's an absolute no-brainer. But like, $70 is a lot of money, right? And like, if you're a busy person who can't sink a weekend into this thing, then I think you're probably going to have more fun spending some of that money on like a Helldivers or, you know, even Infinite Wealth or you know, something like that, maybe. I don't know, but I think if you like Shadow of the Colossus and you've been looking for a game on that scale, there's something here for you. If you like Skyrim, there's something here for you, not in the story aspect. Like, I think Skyrim blows this out of the water as far as story, but as far as the open world, the chaos, the you know, fantasy wish fulfillment, I think there's something here for you.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Crash, you think Skyrim's story shit?
I don't like Skyrim's story at all.
Oh, wow.
I think the world's cool. I think the actual story of, like, I think it's horrible. Even when I first played it. Yeah, I think it's absolutely, like, atrocious story, the main path.
Fair enough.
Oh, I think a lot of the stuff you're saying about this, about, like, the dragon and all that stuff, I think it applies to, like, Skyrim's main story as well.
Yeah.
Which isn't, it's not necessarily a negative. I don't think it's a deciding factor in either game if you play them. I just don't think it's particularly, like...
Oh, I think it is. Do not play this game for the story. Do not play Dragon's Dogma for the story.
No.
100%. Think you're going into like classic BioWare era territory. This is not like a Dragon Age Origins kind of like story thing. But yeah, this is... The story is there as an excuse to attack things and climb trolls. Yeah,
that's the interesting thing, right? When you're talking about fantasy... The most recent things that come to mind are like Baldur's Gate or Dragon Age, I think. And like, I would not put it in that camp. Either of those camps. And so, yeah, I'd say go watch some reviews, obviously, listen to more podcasts and stuff. $70 is a lot of money nowadays. And so be sure that you're making the right purchase because, and like I said, I do think the first 10 hours of the game will put a lot of people off. And so if you think that might be you, it might be worth waiting.
Yeah.
If you do play it, don't play a mage. I loved my time as a mage. But mage is like a very slow start until you get those first two or three upgrades, like class upgrades. I think mages are kind of a little bit on the rougher side.
I also do wish there was a way to level up the vocations without playing them. Like, I'd pay currency. I don't know what else
don't
I
say
could
that.
Do.
Don't say that. You'll get a DLC soon.
We got them. We have a hook for them.
I didn't mean real currency.
Okay.
I also feel like the economy of the game is fucked. Like, I don't understand why some things are really, really expensive and some things are really, really cheap. But whatever, that's a whole different thing.
How many gold for a grape? What?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is money's, going on?
I think money's very... I think the scaling on that's just weird. Where it shouldn't, like, the value you get off of whatever gold you have shouldn't be as high as it does because it makes everything seem significantly worse than it is.
Yeah. But also, like, buying a round of drinks is, like, 2,000 gold. Sleeping somewhere is 1,000 gold.
Hiring a prostitute, wild.
20,000. Who knew?
You knew apparently. What kind of game are you playing?
Gotta do the research sometimes. Gotta do the research, you know what I mean?
You know, we are consummate professionals for science. So I would also say just as a gameplay tip at the beginning, in fact, two tips for you. One, gameplay tip, make sure at least one of you or your pawn is a ranged character. Because don't do what I did, where you are a thief, a rogue, or whatever, and have no ranged attacks. And then the first main fight you get into is with a couple of flying harpies.
Yeah.
Not the best move. And then secondly, if you are thinking of waiting, have a look at Humble. In their March, so when it comes up at the end of this month, they are doing a deal where you can get 20% off Dragon's Dogma if you are a Humble subscriber.
Dragon's Dogma 2 or Dragon's Dogma 1?
Yes, 2.
Oh, there you go then.
There you go.
Bargains. Yeah. Bargains all round, everybody. Bargains all round. The other game that's been on your two rotation, I know, is Resident Evil. Resident Evil.
Big fan of Resident Evil fun.
Final Fantasy Rebirth, which I believe, like Despawn just said, he's put 100 hours in and has finally finished.
Done it.
Well done, Despawn. Well done. I don't understand how we're 3 months in and you've done two 100-hour games. I can't fathom it.
Take your time off work and not having a life, you know.
Fair.
Big tip, if you want to be a proper gamer, get social anxiety so you never want to leave the house. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Like, I am completing so many games right now. But yeah, I have completed Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I can confidently say this game will be in my Game of the Year list unless another 8 games come out this year that are even better than it.
It could happen. It could happen.
But I can also confidently say it will not be number one.
Are
you spoiling your list already, Despawn?
Because no one's going to remember.
3 months into the year and you're spoiling
your list.
No one
is going to remember.
There's not going to be any debate. We know what your top two games are now. There was some mystery to it before.
No. Well, now you just have to guess what the next date are. Okay. I have some issues with this game, but it's still a fantastic game, man. Like, Matt, you need to get to this game so much. Like,
don't Despawn. Don't say that.
No?
Because you're building up like the expectation for Matt to have in this game. And I don't think the way you and Fix sell this game to Matt and try and get him to play this game, I don't think he's going to have the experience you want him to have.
No, yeah.
What I would say is if Dragon's Dogma hadn't come out, I had good momentum on Remake.
Okay.
You know, like I was getting through and I was enjoying it a bit more and I was enjoying the gameplay and I was doing the Colosseum fights and that was good fun and like all those things. And so I had good momentum on it until Dragon's Dogma came out. I don't know if there's anything major on the horizon that could knock that off again, but right now I'm really enjoying Dragon's Dogma and I can't see myself going back to Remake soon.
Okay.
So we'll see. Maybe I'll finish it by the end of the year and then I'll play Rebirth next year.
Just in time for the announcement of the third one.
I mean, that would be the dream. Like, if I think I would pat myself on the back, if I can get through Remake and Rebirth before the third one comes out, I think I've done pretty well.
So you're not going to have it for your Game of the Year conversation. Cool. All right. That's fine.
I promise you this. Like, if I'd been playing Remake in the year it came out, it wouldn't have made my Game of the Year conversation.
No, that's fair. Yeah, no. This is, I don't know. Maybe when I look back, I'll have a different thoughts. But right now, I'm like, there are some issues with this game that, again, I think they've already patched a couple of them out. But there's just some gameplay stuff that's just, so close to being perfect.
I think we were talking about Dragon's Dogma and some like outdated stuff. I think you sort of get some of the same stuff in Final Fantasy Rebirth, and where I think it's partly like a positive to the charm of the game, but sometimes it teeters into like that negative area. Like the mini games are straight up out of a PS2 open world RPG sort of situation, which is great and fantastic until you get to some of like those world traversing mechanics that you get to sometimes where it's like, this is a mini game in the open world, sort of. It's not really a mini game, but it feels like it to a degree where it doesn't necessarily feel super necessary, but it's there to add some sort of layers of fun to the game that can be a detractor. So, and so you get moments of like that where it's just a sort of a flip flop with some of the stuff they do.
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of a leftover of trying to appease to that classic experience. We're trying to bring it into a modern era and trying to get that balance doesn't always work perfectly. Also, I will say, stop putting side quests behind like having to get a specific mini game score. Like, that's not fun. I don't want to have to keep grinding that shit out.
Are there so side quests that force you to do more than like the base level of it?
Yeah. So, ooh, side quest spoiler doesn't affect the story at all, but one of the last side quests you have to get better than the high scoring gold saucer on everything.
Oh, I've already done that.
Yeah, you'll have to do it again.
Yeah, it seems like a skill issue to me.
Yeah,
that's stupid.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I got all the high scores and everything.
You have to top your own score.
So, there is a person that turns up who gets the highest score, okay, and then you have to beat their score.
So basically, go through the main story,
but it's
bad scores.
No,
probably set it to like whatever. But it is a side quest, right? Not the main. Okay.
But if you are like me, who likes 100% everything, it's such a pain in the ass, and it's not an easy. They're not easy scores to beat either.
Yeah,
like they're not. That. You have to like perfect also, everything, like, pretty much.
Can you be mad at the game for that?
Yeah,
that sounds like a skill issue where you're struggling to beat that high score.
I will fly to New York and hit you with a pizza.
I guess
you
have
to.
Well, enjoy that.
Yeah. Stretch goal.
Record it.
Yeah, stretch goal. Content, innit? Hashtag content. But yeah, no,
so
like
100 hours to 100% it. Crash, how many hours in are you?
I'm like 60 or 70. I stopped checking it. I should be around that point. I'm like at chapter 11-ish, I think, towards the end of chapter 11 or the end of chapter 12. I kind of stop paying attention to the chapters I'm on when I do the open world bits.
Have you unlocked a bunch of extra side quests in all the locations yet?
Yes.
Yeah, then you're chapter 12.
Yeah, okay, chapter 12. That's where I'm at. So yeah, I've enjoyed the game a lot. I do think I would generally echo Despawn sentiments. I don't know if there's any more worse stuff the deeper you get. I like it. I like it a lot. I think the combat is almost perfect. I think I would argue that it is perfect. I think it improved on the first one, and I already enjoyed the first one, except they sort of took some of the shortfalls of the first one, like air combat in the first one, depending on who you played as, could have been very, very rough. Whereas this one, characters that it would have been rough in the past, they added sort of options based on who you have on your team and running synergy with them to sort of deal with some of those options. On top of that, they sort of buffed up some of the characters that were weaker. Like, I didn't like Aerith in the first one. I didn't like her at first in the second one until you get the one that buffs up her normal attacks, and all of a sudden Aerith becomes a interesting character to play as. Barrett overall is a lot of small improvements on all the characters, which I think was really, really cool. Yuffie, I don't remember if they changed Yuffie much from the DLC. I can't recall. I don't think they really touched her. Cloud was fun. You have an automatic dash with Cloud now. Like, overall, I think a lot of the improvements are really, really good, and sort of some of the holdbacks are stuff that they introduced for this game. So I would assume that hopefully those get fixed for the third part. And then overall, you have like a really amazing game in the third part, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
It is wild, isn't it, that they took a game from, when did Final Fantasy VII come out?
97.
97, yeah. And turned it into a 300-hour trilogy.
Well, 140 hours so far.
Yeah.
The first game's only 40 hours.
So oh, yeah.
It's not massive. Yeah, yeah. But yeah.
But then do you not assume the third game will be bigger again? I don't know. Maybe not.
I'm going to be honest. I could see them going both ways. I could see them either using the open world that they've created here and expanding on all of, like, making it a bit denser and giving us more stuff to do. Or I could see them just, like, doubling down story beats and making, like, a really good end story. A bit more linear, because again, I'm not going to spoil the story for anyone, but the way that this game ends, it can lean really well into having a perfect, like, just like, yeah, going straight into a story.
So back into like the Final Fantasy VII remake approach.
Yeah.
So you have that like shorter, more dense, where there is some sort of side quests and stuff like that, but it's not as
it's within the path that you're on, rather than being like, yeah, you jump back and forwards kind of thing. Like, okay. I feel like it could work both ways, and I think they've set it up perfectly to be able to do so. And I guess, like, we'll find out in 4 years.
Do you think? Yeah. 4 years?
Well, yeah, it's been like 4 years between these two. So, like, Remake came out in 2020.
Time flies, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
It doesn't feel like it came out in 20. Wow.
No.
Yeah.
Time does fly. Absolutely. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's I don't like that you told me that at all.
No. We're all old, baby.
Yeah.
Speaking of being old, it's a terrible segue. Just awful. Assassin's Creed Jade. Oh, we're going into the news, by the way, everybody. That's what's happening here. Assassin's Creed Jade is reportedly delayed to 2025 amid recent Tencent pivot. Crash, do you know anything about this? I know nothing about this. Tell me all about
it. Yeah, so Tencent is switching out of supporting Western mobile games, apparently, and going for more mobile games in their own territories and IPs that they own, so that they can get a bigger cut of their profit, because big corporation wants big money and more money. So this isn't being made in-house in Ubisoft, which I thought was surprising because I didn't know that was the case, but I'm 100% sure that info was out there the whole time. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. So they're pulling off developers from that game and moving them on to another game. And I don't know how I feel about this. I don't really care, I guess. Were either of you excited for Assassin's Creed Jade?
No. This was the Japanese Assassin's Creed game, right?
China.
This is China. So the one you're thinking of is Assassin's Creed Codename Red.
Code Red, yeah.
Yeah, Code Red is that one, which is going to be the ninja one.
Not, I don't care, because it was the mobile game. And it's like, okay, sure. Although wasn't it Assassin's Creed, I want to say it was called Freedom Cry, which was PSP, and then I think it went to mobile.
Mm.
And was actually quite good.
The 2D one? That's what you're talking about, right?
No, I'm not. It was a PSP exclusive.
Was it the one with the female protagonist?
Three. No.
That was... Oh. I don't know then. I'm not sure. Wrong.
I thought it was like Civil War, Black Slavery story.
Yeah, but that was a female protagonist.
No, was it? There's a male protagonist. I'm looking at the trailer right now, yeah.
Oh. Never mind. I'm thinking of a different game then.
Crash is one of those guys on Twitter who's like, females in video games are ugly, and
I know which one you're thinking of, but
that's crazy. Where do we jump from where we were to that?
Because you thought it was an ugly female protagonist, and it just turned out.
I'm thinking of an actual game. I think it's like Liberty, Assassin's Creed Liberty, or whatever that is. The Assassin's Creed 3. I just want to clarify that.
We're having fun here. These ones, you care about Assassin's Creed Jade?
Oh, so little.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, no, it's very much, yeah, like you say, like, mobile gaming isn't for me. Like, I've got xCloud. If I want to play a game on my mobile, I'm playing Persona 3. Not a 2D platformer. It's...
Every Xbox game is a mobile game. Good mm-hmm. point. Good point.
Exactly.
Well done.
Thank you. Look, nailed it. Look at that. Look at me making a point. But yeah, no, it's not really my cup of tea. Like, I'm not like here for a mobile Assassin's Creed game. Cool that it exists or may exist in the future now that Tencent have decided to pull devs from it.
I'm sure it'll come out at some point.
Oh, yeah.
We're not getting an Assassin's Creed game this year, or are we?
No, I don't think so. Because Red is the next one, and that's 2025 is the release date. I think it's in early 2025. I don't know if that's like rumored or it's like confirmed,
really?
But I think it's early 2025, yeah.
You think they shift from... Hasn't every Assassin's Creed game ever come out in like November, October time?
Yeah, but we're not getting an Assassin's Creed game this year, are we?
So you think they shifted to earlier next year?
I think I wouldn't be surprised.
I would assume that they stick to the holiday release schedule. Maybe I'm wrong.
Do you think Assassin's Creed needs to release only in the holiday release schedule? I would reckon that Assassin's Creed can release whenever and it'd be fine.
I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter.
Let me also just clarify. I could be absolutely wrong about the early early 2025, but I recall reading somewhere that it was early 2025.
Yeah,
I'm
also, you know,
comments.
If the rumors are true and GTA 6 moves to early 2025, which I think is probably very likely, although it may be late 2025, everything will get out of the way anyway, won't it?
So. What do you mean early 20? We're not going to, there's no way we get GTA 6 this year.
No.
Early 2025.
They already confirmed it as 2025.
Oh, did they not? I thought they confirmed it for 2024.
No, nope, 2025.
Oh, okay, then it'll move to 2026.
We might get delayed to early 2026. Yeah.
I think it might, I think that's likely as well.
Also, okay, just to confirm, there was a recent leak and it looked like they were aiming for a fall 2024 for Codename Red.
Okay.
So
maybe it is this year.
Makes sense.
Maybe. We will see. We will see. Next news story is that Bandai Namco has provided another look at Dragon Ball Sparking Zero again. Crash, you're going to have to take this one. What the fuck is this?
So they showed off gameplay, and I just wanted to say that I was wrong about this game, and this game looks very cool. And I don't... Let me just also clarify, I don't think this game will be a good fighting game, but I do think it'll be a good Dragon Ball Z game. I think that clarification is very important.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Well, speaking of a game that might look good but might be bad, Resident Evil 9 will apparently be open world, as a leaker suggests. This one comes from Eurogamer and says, Resident Evil 9 is reportedly being developed as an open world game. Pop-ups, I can't read the thing. And according to a noted leaker, Dusk Gotham, who said the following, Capcom's improvements to the RE engine when developing open-world experiences, like Dragon's Dogma 2, Capcom is eager to capitalize on this, expanding the tech when making Monster Hunter Wild and Resident Evil 9.
Hmm.
Is this a good move? Is this a bad move? Feels like a bad move because the open world of Dragon's Dogma doesn't run great.
Open world doesn't run great, or the world, the cities don't run great.
The dense cities don't run great.
Yeah. I think for Resident Evil, that's mostly like a horror survival game. I don't think it'd be a problem for Resident Evil.
You know?
Or Monster Hunter, to be honest. I don't think that the open world is great. I will say that. I think it looks pretty and all that stuff. I don't know if I'd classify it as great. And I do think there is a level of worry that should be there, but I don't think it's the technical issues are the problem I'd have with it.
Would you not call Village open world?
Didn't play enough. No clue.
No.
I think I would.
I think it's a very, very catered hub areas. I don't think it's classed. You could class it as own open world. You could, granted, you could backtrack between the hubs by the end, but like...
I think by the time you get towards the end of that game, also the backtracking that it's making you do, I mean, maybe you'd call it more Metroidvania in a weird way. Maybe you wouldn't call it open world.
Yeah, open world generally, to me, suggests like there are open mechanics that will just like happen within the world, and you know, you can run off you can see something in a distance or run off to it, that kind of thing. Like Resident Evil Village is definitely not that. It is very structured in each area, what you can do and where you can go. So I wouldn't class that as an open world.
Yeah, okay. What do you think, Crash? Okay. Is this a good move or bad move? Does this make you more excited for the next Resident Evil game or less?
I'm as excited for the next one as I was for 8.
So about 0.
Yeah.
Interesting.
About 8, I'm very much... I think I talked about this on the last episode of the My Xbox and Me podcast, but I'm very worried about this. Like, I don't want an open world Resident Evil. I don't know if the tech is going to be up to scratch to do that. I like my linear experiences when it comes to Resident Evil. I like the structured, like, get from A to B and do that the way the game wants you to and fight your way through it. And I think that's how Resident Evil has always been. And granted, change can sometimes be a good thing. I just think, I don't know. I don't know if I want that in a Resident Evil game. I'm happy to be proven wrong. Definitely.
Hey, Capcom don't miss. As we keep saying, Capcom don't miss. They can do whatever they want.
Okay, Exo Primal still exists.
I think we also point out Exo Primal,
Speaking of another miss, Overwatch 2's PvE content is scrapped as the devs denied bonuses for the first time. This one, again, comes from Eurogamer. Despawn, you've been keeping up with this, haven't you?
No, I've just been keeping up on the Cowboy Bebop skins, which cool. apparently are terrible.
People care about Overwatch? Does anybody care about Overwatch anymore?
Absolutely not. No, like the game just like all of the like issues that this game has had constantly, they just keep shooting themselves in the foot, right?
Yep.
It's like every news story is there's never anything positive. And again, it was like I was excited for the Cowboy Bebop stuff, and it ended up just being cosplay reskins of characters that, apparently not great. And then now we hear stories about devs being denied bonuses and them scrapping more content. It's just like, what are you doing?
This comes from a report from Bloomberg, and they've stated that the sales of Overwatch 2 across the board have been quote unquote poor. And that they do not plan to finish any of the PvE content currently in development. Go on, Crash.
I will say, I do think that this is, unfortunately, probably the best case for the game. I do know that there hasn't been enough changes and enough additions to the PvP to keep it interesting enough for the people who do care and the people who are involved in the game. So I do think stopping focus on the PvE for the sake of the game is probably the right decision. I do think it also sucks and it stings from them going before like, hey, Overwatch 2 is we're adding single player content and all this stuff, PvE content, and then to just scrap that and now scrap even the little bits we were going to get. I think that's unfortunate, but I do think it is a best case for the game, if I'm going to be honest. So if you are legitimately an Overwatch fan, I think this is probably good news for you, even if it sounds like it's not. That being said, not the denied bonuses part. That's strictly for the PvE being scrapped part. The denied bonuses sucks. It's stupid.
Yeah, as it says in this this article, it's like Overwatch 2 staff were told they received nothing, even though Blizzard staff previously got a bonus based on the overall company's performance, not just on their individual games. So the fact that they're denying just Overwatch 2 staff bonuses based on Overwatch 2's performance rather than the overall company's performance, it does feel like a bit of a slap in the face.
Do we look at Microsoft and sort of
have a word?
Yeah. With Microsoft on that. Is that like a, do we look at that as a Microsoft thing or do we look at that as a
Blizzard thing?
Activision Blizzard thing? Yeah. Mm,
that is a question.
Yeah. I think it's hard within the first, I mean, at the scale that we're talking about, maybe even 2 years of acquiring a company like this to put like systemic change in to like change the way a bonus scheme works or something. Who knows how difficult that stuff is to make happen behind closed doors, because you've got to assume that everybody, you know, bonus schemes are contracted, right? And so like if everybody who works at Blizzard is coming now into Microsoft, do we need to renegotiate every contract across the board to change a bonus scheme? You know, these things are very complicated and legally difficult to manage. Yeah. I think it's hard to kind of point the finger at Microsoft in the first at least 12 months and go like, stuff is fucked over here. And they're like, yeah, we know stuff was fucked over here. That's why we got a good deal on them.
That's fair. I just thought it would be like, it was
it is wild to say, that $69 billion is a good deal, but it is.
I was gonna say that as well.
Clearly is, yeah. It's sad to see developers face the brunt of this kind of stuff, but yeah, honestly, Overwatch 2 has been miss after miss for a while.
I was gonna say, and at this point in the industry, aren't you just happy you've got a job? But that's not fair.
That sucks.
Okay, so we're moving in to my favorite segment of the show. It's called
A D.
I cannot get the words out of my fucking mouth today. I tell you what. D-Sport was like, hey, Matt, you want to host the show? I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. I clearly can't. It's agree or disagree time. I put forth a somewhat inflammatory statement. Everybody says whether they agree or disagree, and then we argue for your listening pleasure. As always, let us know in the comments if you agree or disagree with the statement I'm about to read. And of course, let us know if you have cool statements that you want us to argue about, because we will absolutely do that. Agree or disagree? Xbox should make and release Minecraft 2.
Disagree.
Disagree.
Agree.
Go on, Matt.
Okay.
I feel like I'm always, like, before we started this segment, you guys used to say I had bad takes, I'd say crazy shit, and I was like, prove it. And now we've got
the you're proving it.
And more often than not, I find myself on the opposite side of the fence to you guys.
Yeah. What is a Minecraft 2 sequel? That's all I want to know.
What is Minecraft 2?
Yeah.
I think Minecraft 2 is... That's a great question, Crash, that I had not considered. What is Minecraft 2? Minecraft 2, I think, probably has some more narrative elements. Fuck it. Get Jack Black in to do the voice of the main character. You've just hired him for the movie. Why not? Let's go. And I think it kind of just expands on everything that was already there. Oh, Fixer's messaging like he wants in on the agree disagree. I think, it kind of just expands on everything that's already there. It's prettier. It runs on, you know, the next set of tech and stuff. They can do whatever they want to do, right? I think it puts Microsoft in a good power position with their exclusives to really decide what they want to do. I think if Minecraft 2 comes out and is exclusive for 12 months, then I think that's powerful.
This guy, I swear to God.
I think he's also muted and has, unless it's just his noise gate fucking with
hello?
Him.
Hello?
No, he's like, there he is.
I'm here. Yeah. What do you mean, boys? I've been here the whole time. I love the look of disparity in Despawn's face. Like, this fucking guy, how fucking dare he? I'm here. What are we agreeing or disagreeing to?
Let's restart the segment. Agree, disagree, because I only had a chat shit for 10 seconds. Agree, disagree. Xbox should make and release Minecraft 2.
Oh, shit.
You got to go first.
You can leave.
Disagree.
Everybody's disagree except me, as has become the norm in this segment of the show. I was saying, I think leaning in on Minecraft as a franchise, I think like it's certainly, as far as the zeitgeist is concerned, on the downward trajectory. I know a lot of people still play it. I understand. But like as far as like mainstream understanding that Minecraft is a big deal, that's on the downward trajectory. You've just cast Jack Black in a new movie or whatever. Who the fuck knows what that's going to look like? I think Aquaman is in it as well, Jason Momoa. But I think, lean in. Like, make a Minecraft sequel. The Minecraft spin-offs you've done haven't exactly lit the world on fire. So lean in, make a Minecraft 2, make it bigger, make it better, introduce some narrative elements to it, get a new audience excited about it again, keep it Xbox exclusive for 12 months. Sorry, go on.
You keep saying narrative, right? I want to ask you, why do people play Minecraft? And the answer, what you keep saying narrative is the last reason people play Minecraft. Actually, people don't play Minecraft for that at all. And every time they've tried to do narrative, people have been like, I don't really care for this. I just want a fun game. Mm-hmm. I just want to play Minecraft and build stuff with my blocks. And I don't think you can create a sequel and they already update the game regularly. And you could question the update procedure. And you could say like, maybe they do expansion updates where they do bigger updates and sort of sell those as like these big things. I don't think a sequel would work for Minecraft. And I don't know how many people would jump into a sequel for Minecraft.
So my thing, especially for this, and you could kind of covered it on it, like, oh, there's a downward trajectory. How downward do you think that's going to be if you start fracturing the audience? If you give them a Minecraft 2 that is lore heavy and all this kind of story stuff, there's going to be like a big part of that community that'll be like, I don't want that. I just want to, like Crash says, I just want to go build things with my blocks. I'll just stay on Minecraft 1. So Minecraft 1 will lose a ton of players because there'll be some people going to Minecraft 2, but there won't be enough going to Minecraft 2 for it to be a hit, in my eyes anyway.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the other thing is we've already seen this with a certain game called Overwatch. When you don't market something appropriately when it's the exact same thing, why would anybody care? And you lose all the steam and all the fanfare and all of the hype out of what you've built, right? Destiny was supposed to be Destiny. And then you see what they've done with Destiny 2. And obviously we know how that works as publisher base, right? Minecraft doesn't need to change. It doesn't need, in terms of like, it doesn't need to change in terms of a sequel, but it needs, I agree with you in terms of like updates and they're still doing that, right? Like you've got the creative
store. They still do updates.
They just, but I'm saying like, they just brought out the new creative store thing where you can buy the subscription pass to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far
as a sequel, like you don't need a sequel.
Yeah, as far as like with the updates and stuff like that, I do know people have had issues with there not being enough and them giving you choices. And it's like, why not include all that stuff? Because it would be cool. You make enough money off Minecraft, et cetera, et cetera. And that's a whole different conversation. But I do think one thing, the fanfare aspect, like the mods. Mods are huge in Minecraft. People will continually replay Minecraft by adding new mods and essentially creating new games out of it. Yeah. And so if you do create a Minecraft 2, you do lose all the mod support as well. And starting bare bones is a very big ask for experiences that people are already used to and associate with their core Minecraft experience, even if they're not the core Minecraft experience.
Yeah. Mm. What, like, middle ground, what I, if you're wanting that, like you say, the PV or the single player experience, the story experience, maybe, and let me finish when I say this, because I know as people are going to pull that face, maybe go the COD route of having a hub. There it is. There's the face. Having a hub where you're like, you have the Minecraft experience, but if you want a single player thing, it's linked into like a thing on the main hub, on the main opening screen.
If you want the single player thing, launch Netflix and play Minecraft Story.
True.
You got it. You have the story.
It has it. You know, you're right.
People forget it exists and it's stupid and it's dumb and most people don't like it. I don't want to say it's stupid and dumb. I've never played it.
It's good. It's fun.
Okay, I played it. It's stupid and dumb.
Oh, okay, there you go. It's got Patton Oswalt in it. What can you not love it?
I kind of agree with that. I think maybe it's not Minecraft 2, but it is Minecraft Universe or some nonsense, right? And you pull in all the Minecraft games. And I agree with you, D-Spawn. I think that's a great idea of going, and I think I pulled you onto my side by you pitching that idea. By sort of making this hub where you go, hey, Minecraft Story is over here, and Minecraft Classic is here, and Online Minecraft is here, and Battle Royale Minecraft is here.
I just want to point out, D-Spawn pulled you over to our side. You didn't pull D-Spawn over to your side. Because your point is a sequel. You can't change it now. You want to launch a sequel.
Listen. We talked about making this segment shorter, and you all well and truly kicked the shit out of me there. So I think that is agree, disagree. Let us know in the comments below whether or not you agree or disagree. Should Minecraft 2 be being made, being happening? Is it a thing that we need in our lives?
Guys, I got a new segment for the podcast.
Oh, shit.
I went to a boot sale this morning, hence why I'm not on the podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
Bought an Xbox 360.
Why?
How much did I pay for this Xbox 360?
Okay. No, that's great. Does it work?
Oh, no, haven't tested it.
Did it come with any cables?
Only one. And this will tell you what type of Xbox it is.
No, it's the VGA cable. The SCART one. Yeah, the SCART. Okay. Nice. Okay.
The old VGA SCART. Yeah.
So that's a 5 gigabyte Xbox. We're talking. Right?
This would have been the Xbox Arcade Xbox.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have come with the hard drive, but this one does have a hard drive.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Well, I think that part's irrelevant. I don't think the hard drive is being considered into the price of that, right? We're talking pounds here, right? Price-wise, it is.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I mean, here's the better question, I think, is how much, if MC Fixer spent X amount of money, how would we be disappointed in him? Because I think it's quite low, monetary-wise, especially at a car boot sale. I'd be upset if you spent more than a tenner on that.
Okay.
I think 10 was where I was leaning towards as well with that.
So I just want it to be 5.
Okay.
So
equally, like did you ask, does it work?
I'll tell you the story afterwards. Just play my game and then I'll tell you the story afterwards.
I'm going 5.
Fresh?
I'm gonna stick with 10.
Okay. D-Spawn?
I'm going 20.
Okay.
God, if you spend £20, I'm going to be mad at you.
£1 for this Xbox.
Perfect.
Nice.
Next item.
Oh, okay.
I like this. I like this a lot.
I bought an Xbox 360 Elite Edition.
What are you going to do with them?
120 gig hard drive, HDMI on the back. It looks pretty good.
Did that come with any wires?
No wires, nothing.
Okay.
No wires, no proof it works.
Does the remind me? Does the power cable? Is it the classic kettle lead? for that one?
Or did it have it's the power pack.
Is it the power pack?
Yeah.
So without those, you're kind of fucked.
I've got them.
He has one.
Okay,
yeah.
He has them. But yeah.
I've got them, yeah.
Because he's Mr. Xbox.
He will to see what games they have on them and stuff like that. He'll make content out of it for sure, without a doubt.
100%.
Fix got them for a reason. Fix it in like just...
How much do they pay?
That's a better question.
So it's an Elite one. With 120 gig.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
The person that you talked to, was it their consoles?
Crash, the story will come afterwards, mate. I'm sorry. I can't answer any questions. I'm really sorry.
I got one. Five? Same price as the other one.
I'm going to go for five, three. Okay.
Three? And so you're getting one as well, Crash?
I'm going one, yeah.
You'd be correct, Crash. £1.
Damn.
£1.
This is clearly like somebody's grandma or somebody who has it and selling it.
There was one more item. Hey, okay. Lee! You can't hear me. His house is too big. I know. Flex.
Wow.
I bought a Mac.
Yeah.
You know, like the big, the old big Mac.
Yeah.
I saw your picture.
Oh, okay. Oh. So you saw it. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Are you talking iMac as in like the screen?
No. Like a desktop.
Desktop. Like big, old school. Silver. Yeah. The old school Mac.
With the chunky keyboard.
This is the only piece I have to show you guys to prove that I have it, but I do have it. There's a photo.
Okay, I saw it. Yeah.
How much do you think I paid?
For that incredibly old piece of hardware, probably taking a place, whoever sold it was selling consoles for $1 or £1.
Could have been a different person.
£1,
Chris? No, it's not a different person. No, I'm not saying £1. No, don't put words in my mouth.
My apologies.
Five.
£1.
Eastbourne?
Oh, so I'm looking at, like, did I fix this? Let's have a look. Has he broken my entire stream? No, we're good. Okay. So here you go. So for those who are watching on video, you can see it is the full-on, like, silver desktop. I remember how much they were worth. I think you paid... Oh, that's a bit bad, actually. Did it work? That's the question. It comes with a mouse and a cable.
I didn't say that.
I'm looking at it. I can see it.
I didn't say they came with it, though.
That's true.
You just bought the unit without the mouse.
Yeah. I'm going to go... I think you paid £5 for that.
Okay. So we've got £1, £5, £5. Chris, you are correct. £1.
What?
So, story time.
Go on.
I walked past this guy, and he's screaming, everything a pound. And I'm looking around and I'm like, and we've been walking this whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm,
and I'm like, I want something. Like, I'm looking, I'm like, £1. And I look at the Mac and I go, that's got to be worth £1, right? Like, even if I throw it away and it don't work or whatever, it's got to be worth £1. Like, because why the heck not? So I'm like, all right, do I really want to carry this though? Then I see the two Xbox 360s and the guy looks at me and smiles and he goes, they're worth £1, mate. And I went, you know what, mate?
They are
worth £1 each. They are. And I didn't have an Elite. So I was like, well, I definitely want the Elite. And then the other one, I was like, look, for £1? You can't say no for £1.
You have geometry walls on it.
You don't know what's on the hard drive. You don't know.
Yeah.
For £3 in total, I think I got a pretty good haul.
I mean, worst case scenario, if you plug him in the background, you're going to have two lovely red rings to look at.
That was literally my thought process, which is like, the worst case scenario is they both got red ring of death and they just go straight in the bin.
Yeah.
And I just take the hard drives off. So weird.
No, crazy.
That was a podcast. Everyone have a good, did you have a good time?
Yeah.
I had a great time. We still need to blind react some games.
Oh, you want to, I can do it. Oh, you want to do some blind reacts? I've got you. Yeah.
He's
got
one lined up if you want
to.
You can play.
D-Spawn was going to use the website.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
That was.
The website's trash, though.
I know. But
Let me do it.
I've
still got some from Big Willy. So shout out to my boy, Big Willy P. This is MXAM Extra. It feels weird to not be on this episode. I hope you guys will miss me. Next one. This is blind ranking video games. I'm going to say a video game, and the boys are going to rank them 1 through 5, starting with... Leisure Suit Larry.
Five. They're not good games.
We could be in a dating games category,
and it's still not a good game.
I hate
that game.
Your Big Willy knows what he's doing, though, right? Like, he's going to throw out a ledge, shoot Larry. We're going to put it...
The question is Fix reading them, like, from top to bottom, or is he, like, just picking one?
I'm letting you know right now, I always read them in the order that Big Willy P puts them in. Okay. Always.
At the username that Big Willy P picked, right? This tells us something about this man.
His name is William?
Tells us nothing.
I think he rates Leisure Suit Larry highly.
That's me.
Yeah, but he's not on the podcast.
This is our list. We're not trying to match his list. I'm having people sign in their list and like pick out the order we would put these games in. This is a five.
Yeah.
Okay. I want it to be on the record.
I'll be wrong on this. If I'm wrong on this and Leisure Suit Larry is number one on this list, I will eat that. I'm cool with that. I'm fine.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Next up, Alone in the Dark.
Oh.
The 360 version is what he's talking about specifically.
Really? Okay, mm-hmm. That's interesting. Not as a franchise.
No.
The specific 360 game. It had one really cool thing that I liked that I've never seen another game do, where the inventory system was him opening his jacket and looking down.
I guess you're right, though. Sorry to interrupt you. I guess you're right. It is the series.
It is a series, is it?
Yeah, okay. I guess so. Wait, carry on. What about this jacket? I want to hear about this jacket. Sorry, I interrupted.
The inventory system in that 360 Alone in the Dark game was him opening his jacket and looking down, and then he had like stuff in his jacket, and you have to like grab it out of the jacket.
Oh, that's cool.
It also, for the time, was boasting, I don't know if this was the case, but I remember the marketing was all like, look at our fireworks and our fire spreads, and you can set fire to a chair and then like wave it around, and it's like fire. That was the whole thing.
I want to set fire to a chair now. Mainly this one because it gives me a bad back. I'm going to...
It's middle of the road. It's three.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards three. Yeah.
I'm cool with that. I don't know nothing about Alone in the Dark. So,
unless this is all becoming horror games and Leisure Suit Larry was secretly Sally.
The new Alone in the Dark came out last week, didn't it? And it got pretty rough reviews.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't played it yet, and I'm the only review everyone needs to know about. So,
facts.
Fair enough.
Do we put it to four?
Big facts.
Four.
Nah, five. Three's fine. Three.
Three's
fine.
Yeah, three's fine.
Okay. Next up, Duke Nukem.
Ooh.
This is a tough one.
This is a tough one. Do we go on recency bias? Because like the last one I remember was Forever and it was atrocious. Or do we go on lineage and shoot Nukem as a series?
This seems like a lineage type of list, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like...
Yeah, I think it's a two.
Yeah.
I think it's like an impact on the industry and like a zeitgeist and, you know, do people know two. The characters and stuff? Yeah, I think it's a two.
Yeah.
Okay, so Leisure Suit Larry, number five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alone in the Dark, number three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Duke Nukem, number
two.
Two.
Two. So that leaves you with our next game being Shaq Fu.
Four.
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 Yeah, it's still a good four.
Four.
Mm-hmm. I always hate when we leave number one up to the gods.
Can I be 100% honest? I've never played Shaq Fu.
No, me neither.
No.
So.
Have you, Fix? You played Shaq Fu?
I must have done, yeah. Well, I must have done.
Clearly made an impact. Clearly made an impact.
I don't remember it, but I must have done, yes. I'm
I think it has to go. This is tough because are we talking about, because there's Shaq Fu, the old like SNES version, and then they made another one.
The remade,
I think I played the new one. I don't think I played the NES one. That's you guys.
It's a four, and number one's up to the gods.
Yeah.
It's a four, number one's up to the gods.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
Leisure Suit Larry,
thank you. Leisure Suit Larry, number five. Shaq Fu, number four. Alone in the Dark, number three. Duke Nukem, number two. And E.T., number one.
Fuck!
No problem with that. No problem with that whatsoever.
The quote-unquote worst game ever made. Is it a list of the worst games?
The quote of the thing was worst games of all time.
Oh, we nailed it then.
I think so. Because if you like, put the worst at the top, then it is E.T. because it calls
the video game. No, wrong way around, guys. Wrong way around. E.T. should have been at the bottom.
Really? If it's the worst games.
E.T. is by far the worst game.
E.T. is
number one.
Yeah. And technically, Duke Nukem Forever is one of the worst games.
So, okay. I see how you're saying it.
Yeah.
I think it should have been like very specific games because I think that's what that list was meant
for.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think you did a good job.
Thanks.
I don't think you could have done much better. Alone in the Dark, I guess. Maybe lower.
I think any of those games anywhere on that list would have been fine.
Yeah.
I don't think I feel strongly about any of those games. So maybe E.T. should have actually been number five. Other than that, like, I don't.
No, I'm with that. I'm with that. I'm happy with that. And with that, we will plug and get ourselves out of here. Fix, what have you got to plug?
Go to a boot sale close to you, guys, because I had a ball. We bought some donuts. We bought some game consoles that probably don't work. And I missed the podcast, which I don't usually do, but yeah. I'm here.
To be fair, it's kind of my, like, we had the discussion yesterday. We wanted to talk about Dragon's Dogma, which you haven't played, and I wanted to get it done nice and early. So, we figured it out.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah.
Eastbourne had a heart attack twice, but that's fine.
It's fine.
I knew it was going to upset him. When I was in the car, I said to Halo, I said, don't say anything. I'm just going to piss off Eastbourne real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw you still alive, so I was like, I want to come and be here. I miss you guys.
Don't piss me off again.
I'm sorry.
Eastbourne's going to cut your part out completely.
He's just going to edit it all out. I wasn't even here.
That edit we never did. We never finished the career disagree. We never did any of that.
It's just, it's going to cut. It's going to cut to a Kirby Enthusiasm. They all died. Kind of cold ending.
But yeah, that's my plug.
Eastbourne, what you got to plug?
I'm going to plug the 12-hour stream coming up next month, just because I want people to get excited for it. April 27th, 12 hours of these four idiots playing video games, doing community shenanigans, eating these god-awful beans. There they are.
I got beans.
Other spoiler of what I also got.
I have a question for you, Despawn.
Go.
Where did you get them?
At the internet.
But like, where?
Thing I'm literally about to show now are the beans. The beans are Amazon. This. Let me get it right in there.
Sauce.
There is a website called StreetFighterHotSauce.com, I think. Like, and I got them in there, and they came in like 3 days. Go treat yourself. They got three packs to choose from as well. I went with pack number one, which is the Guile's Patriot Inferno, Ryu's Dragon Blaze, and Dalsim's Mystic Serenity.
Were any of the hot sauces Akuma?
I don't remember. It's is Akuma in Street Fighter 2? It is Street Fighter 2 specific. Wow, you're the fighting game fan. But yes, 12-hour stream. Come check us out at the end of next month, 27th. We will be posting it about all over the socials. We have got a lot of plans. We are trying to raise some ton of money so we can do some cool stuff for the channel and bring you even better content. If that's even possible, who knows?
Crash, what are you plugging?
Monday. It'll be tomorrow after you see this because it'll be out on Sunday, but it's Mondays, and if you watch it after Monday, then it'll already be up there. My D&D and me continuing our Baldur's Gate playthrough, continuing the Halston heist that'll be going on Mondays until who knows how long, maybe forever. Maybe we never stop it. Who knows?
It is Baldur's Gate. So.
It never ends.
Yeah, maybe it just keeps going. Tune in to check that out or check out the VODs. We do have the last couple of episodes up there. They've been a good time. I think I've enjoyed every single episode we've done a lot, to be honest. I think it's been a lot of fun. Some amnesia here and there, but that's a story for another time. Go check them out.
It was all a dream.
Yeah. No, it's been good.
It is chaos, and we are making more progress than I thought we would, and it feels more cohesive than I thought it would.
Like, I agree.
It all works better than I thought it would. Not that I didn't think it would work well, but it is just, it's great. It's really good.
Agreed. Agreed.
That's it from us this week. This was episode 10 of My Xbox and Me Extra. As always, we're after your feedback. Go join the My Xbox and Me Discord. Leave comments on the YouTube. It helps us out so much. We love you. And we will see you all tomorrow for the Halston Heist Part 3.
Deuces.